We see that we have a lot of project managers in the room. How many of you have also been either in open source projects or been know what open source is? Raise the hand. Okay. How many of you think that open source and project management can work together? Or not? Sort of, not. More like the not. Okay. So that's really the whole principle of this presentation. Moses and I, since the beginning of the, a lot of sort of those conversations around open source at NICFI started a little debate. He's the open source guru, and I'm the project management person. And we started a joke that it sounded like a grand battle between us, but it really isn't, and that's what we're trying to talk about today. So is our project management and open source really a paradox? Can they work together? Can you use some of the principles in each other's fields? So our main talk today is to kind of do a brief recap about project management and open source. You heard tons about it, so I won't stop there for too long. We're going to kind of address the myths of project management and open source. We're going to hopefully refute some of them, give you some examples around it. We're going to talk about the critical success factors, some examples, and really talk about the similarities between them and how you can leverage them. So, really quickly, project management is about a discipline, right? It's a body of knowledge. It's the discipline of organizing and planning people, resources, tools, schedules. You hear a lot around that. And open source, you've also kind of had that covered by Mike and Brian Lee. It's about the community. It's about a process. It's about software and code. So somebody give me a couple of ideas about what are some of the myths of project management. What do you usually think about when you think of project management? What are the things that you hear? Because there's sort of oppositional camps around it.
Rigid.
Absolutely. Rigid. What else? What else do you hear? Pardon? Come on. Speak up.
Just scheduling.
Theoretical.
Just scheduling.
Scheduling. Absolutely.
Complex.
I had a sense about that, didn't I? So what about the other people that are true project managers, feel passion deep in the core about project management? What do they say about project management? That project management is the silver bullet, the best. What else?
It helps get things done.
Helps get things done. It's the only option to success. That's how you manage. You can't have a successful project unless you're using project management. It's the answer. It's the way to go about doing anything that has anything to do with management or projects. So that's what you tend to hear. These are the two schools of thought. So my answer to that is, I have some public health research scientist person who comes to me and says, Sabine, this whole project management mumbo jumbo you talked to me about, it's not really useful to me. I say, okay, do you have a hypothesis that you're working on? A research topic? Yes. Great. We call that a scope. Do you have things you have to hand over to someone? Well, of course. Literature review, an abstract, the first draft. I call those deliverables. Is somebody looking over you? Do you have to hand it to someone? Yes. We call those a sponsor. Do I have other people working with you? Yes. Of course. I'm not going to do this all by myself. These are called team members. Are they due at specific points? Yes. Timelines? Are there going to be some issues around it? Yes. It's kind of controversial what I'm working on. It's called a risk. You can leverage those practices. What about a project manager who comes to me and says, it's the only way that I can do anything. Sabine, here is my schedule. All the constraints are there. All the dependencies are there. I have scheduled every single moment from now until next year. Are you building something and they will come? Is the product something people want? Did you ask that question? Do you have the right people working with you? Are you able to adjust and be flexible and be adaptable and really think about how you're going to manage and how you're going to react to everything that's happening on the ground? Because it's about the balance of art and science. It's about people. You can have the best schedule on the face of the earth, but if you don't know how to work with people and you don't build that trust within your team and that communication conversation, nobody's going to deliver that project. If you haven't talked with your stakeholders and have a clear sense of how you define success holistically, you're not going to have a successful project. So it's the balance of art and science, and I want to thank Peggy for that statement, who shared that with me yesterday. The methodology is a body of knowledge. It's a whole body. There's tons of information in there. You go, like Brian has said, to PMI, there is many, many things that you can leverage, from ideas and thought process to whole tools and templates and checklists. So think people first. Think about how it works within your organization. Think about the processes you can use, and then think about the tools. So don't start with, I have to fill a status report. Start really with, who am I working with? Where am I working? What's the business am I in? What am I trying to accomplish? And then how can I leverage those tools? So the principles behind it are really transparency and communication and discoverability. And just to give you some ideas, a project plan helps you be transparent. Risk and issue log, now these are some of the tools and the techniques of project management, help you be able to be transparent, tell you what's going on within your project so everybody can access it and everybody can have a sense of what it is. Communication, your status reports, you're talking to your stakeholders about what's happening in your project. Your stakeholder analysis plan even tells you who are these people that are even influencing or care about your project. And discoverability, you're supposed to be able to trace all the decisions that are being made. So somebody has a product, you're not supposed to at the end of the day say, how did you come up with those products? How did you decide that it's that function? Or how did you decide it's that research topic? You can trace it all the way back to what the requirements were, what you were told you're supposed to be doing. And of course, after every project, one of the things that project management tells you to do, the best practice tell you to do, is to do a lessons learned. So every time it's about learning, it's about sharing. So these are the guiding principles of project management. It's about the team. Start there. As a project manager, the first thing you have to do is you have the right mixture of expertise and compatibility. People have to know how to work together. Focus on understanding the intent of the project, about the stakeholders and the definition of success. Balance demands. That means you have to adjust and adapt. You can't be stuck on that project schedule. The grandest battle I ever had when it comes to dealing with a project is fighting with a project manager who would not let go of the schedule. And the only way I was able to do that is to literally get onto his computer, take it off his schedule. That was the ultimate battle I've had with a project manager. Just would not let go of that schedule. You have to adjust and adapt. You have to track how and why it's changing. You have to update your plans accordingly. Prepare a reasonable plan. Don't overcomplicate it. Make sure you're looking at all of the stakeholders and all of the demands and do something reasonable that can be achieved that will give you those results. Communicate relentlessly and proactively. Communicate, communicate, communicate to your team members, to your stakeholders, to your sponsors. That's ultimately what will define a successful project. Your ability to work as a team, your ability to stay organized, and your ability to communicate. So, you know, and you've heard, and based on who's in this room, there are a lot of project managers and project management practices across government. Department of Defense, Department of Energy, OMB, CDC, tons of states have project management offices, have project management certification programs. Project management is everywhere. And the question is, you want to be able to look at it and say, what does it mean for me? And then what does it mean for me as a scientist? What does it mean for me as a researcher, as an EPI, as a project manager? And really think about how it can be helpful to you. Don't let it run your world. You leverage that body of knowledge and use it so that you can be successful in how you're going to manage your projects. The ultimate thing to think about when it comes to project management and open source is that there's very interesting myths about how these things work. And just like there are some myths about open source, there are quite a few about project management too.
Okay, I recognize that I am the last speaker on the third day of a conference, so we'll go quick. So, you know, we've been working a lot with NICFI and kind of talking through open source and how it can be used, how it can support Finn, how it can support other efforts. it. Like, maybe it's the phone. And how it can support other efforts at CDC. And so a lot of, through all those conversations, all these different kind of myths have come up, right? These, you know, kind of some folks who were kind of naysayers about open source, whether or not it was applicable to use in a public health space. These are the kind of things that come up. And so I thought it'd be useful to kind of refute some of these, talk through them, you know, let people kind of understand that it's really a very different world than some of the common misperceptions. So the first thing is that it's the Wild West, right? It's just a bunch of cowboys out there, a bunch of guys who are 13 years old with, you know, some computers and are hacking into all sorts of stuff. And occasionally they come up with something useful that business can use. It's very different from that. That intellectual property is not protected. Mike and Brian actually talked a lot about the licensing. We'll talk a little bit about that. There's no quality control. That's another big thing, that it's unproven, right? You can't base a government effort, you can't base a business off open source. And that it's only for basic software, right? Things that are specific to the public health domain, they are not a really good fit for this. Or something that's specific to an industry is not a really good fit. But basic things like an operating system like Linux or a browser like Firefox, that would be really appropriate. Go ahead. So the first thing is that it's not the Wild West. There is a sheriff. The sheriff is actually the community. And there's an example of a couple companies here who actually use open source products in their products, and then went against the license, and the community actually discovered it, right? You know, there are the people who actually spend time to take apart electronic devices and find the code that's in them. And when it came out, there was actually a little bit of an uproar, right? And because the licenses that these products use required the code that these companies built to be submitted back to the community, and these vendors didn't do it initially. There's actually some boycotting of some of their products, and then after that, they saw the light and donated that code back in, and now they're back in the good graces, right? So it's the community ultimately that ends up, you know, governing how open source is used and whether or not people actually adhere to licenses, which is, I thought, was pretty neat. You know, I had more than 50. Mike said there's more than 72. Obviously, there's quite a few licenses that are identified by the Open Source Initiative and the Free Software Foundation. You know, they're really also kind of setting some of the boundaries and guidelines about defining what is open source and how open source works. And then we talk about quality assurance. You know, there's a lot to be said when you have literally thousands of users, millions of users in the case of Firefox, right, who actually take a look at early versions of software because they care about it. They actually want to do it. You couldn't have any organization, couldn't afford to pay for the same number of users that actually use the beta versions of the latest version of Firefox. You couldn't have done it. There are actually literally millions of people who downloaded the beta version, actually reviewed it, sent in bugs, and then those developers were then able to concentrate on those bugs and knock those out. And Firefox, the latest version, 3.0, is actually the most successful, one of the most successful open source projects ever. It had, in 24 hours, close to 10 million downloads. It was insane. Right, because you know that community has built up. People recognize the quality of the software, and it's you know head and shoulders better than a lot of the commercial projects. That's simply because you know there are more people looking at it, more people using it. So it's a really viable strategy once you have a community that's really engaged. So we talk about it not being a proven methodology, an unproven methodology. That's really not true. If you go back maybe 10 years ago, there were a lot of commercial Unixes. You know, there's AIX from IBM. Sun has Solaris. They still have Solaris. They've actually opened it up. And then there was HP UX, HP's versions of Unix. Most of those, their market share, it's really hard to measure. It's extraordinarily hard to measure because they've been replaced in many ways, in many environments by Linux, which is a free open source operating system. And I think Linux has something like 30% of the server market. It's a pretty large percentage for something that's free and open. You know, Sun has made the transition to being what they consider to be an open source company. Mike and Brian had mentioned that they bought MySQL. They bought a couple other open source projects. And then they've also open sourced some of their own products, including their sort of frontline operating system, Solaris. And they consider themselves to be an open source company. I mean, that's a big shift for someone, for a methodology that's supposedly unproven. IBM has made a serious commitment to open source, supporting development tools, application servers. Actually, they've even donated sort of their flagship application server version of it to the Apache project. All the code base, all of that, where they had, you know, 48% of the Java application server market, sort of the base version of their application server they donated to that to the Apache project, which is pretty amazing. And so it's not just for basic software. So I took a screenshot here from RODS. I know Dr. Espino was here earlier giving a talk on it. But it's just an example of, you know, open source projects that are for specific domains, right? From managing hospitals, from doing epidemiological research. If you go to Wikipedia and you typed in open source healthcare projects, you will find, I think it's 125 open source projects ranging all the gamut for healthcare management and public health. It's pretty impressive that there's such a large body there. Okay, next. So you've seen this slide, but this is a little bit different in that we're talking about, you know, how these three principles really drive open source. And so it very much dovetails in with Mike and John had said earlier. So, you know, everything is open, right? And when we say open, really we're saying that you have access to everything as a user. You know, you can see the discussion to understand where a project is, how it's gotten there. You can go through, you can see any of the code base, you can see how decisions are being made. And you can have an influence on that, right? You can participate in those discussions. It's very open, and it's very much a big culture shift. So the critical success factor is that we can talk about tools, we can talk about technologies, but ultimately it's really about the community. Even when the projects where they're very technical, right? I mean, so it's an operating system or some development language that someone is now building, is that what you see is that it's all the same community dynamics you would have in any organization. So it's the community structure that matters the most. And a lot of times the tools they use for communication are the most basic. There are mailing lists and mail servers, and they are, you know, an email. And that will be what they use to sort of document the communication. A lot of times it's not even anything as sophisticated as some of the tools that Mike and John use, although those are Mike and Brian had mentioned, but even though those are used a lot, for a lot of projects, it's nothing more than, you know, email being captured and archived and stored so that people can see the trend, they can see the threads of a discussion. It's pretty impressive. One of the big things about the community, it's no different than you would have anywhere else, is that you have to really remain true to your principles. So if you organize your community around a certain set of principles that you're going to allow for a lot of participation, allow for a lot of engagement, and then you change that later on, what you'll see is what we talked about earlier, is that people will vote with their feet and move on. They'll take your code base and move on. It's not really about you attempting to control, but really providing some guidance for a community, and the community really buying into your vision. If they don't buy into your vision, your project won't go anywhere. It's really that simple. So, you know, we talked about a little bit earlier about how open source is used in different federal agencies. It's also true that it's used a lot in state agencies. We had mentioned earlier about the NSA with SE Linux, which is a really great example because it's a security framework for operating systems, and what that enables you to do is to make it access to operating systems really secure, and applications those operating systems be secure. And it's sponsored by the NSA, it's completely open source, it's incorporated in many versions of Linux, and it's used by the CIA and the DOD. It's only about security, so it really refutes the idea that you can't have secure open source systems. When, you know, and the NSA uses it themselves to secure some of their own systems. So it's a pretty powerful example of how open source in a government space, and something obviously is, you know, the national security, right, something as sophisticated as that, where they can depend on open source as a reliable tool, a reliable methodology for building software, which probably means that for most other scenarios, it's probably appropriate or could be adapted to fit. So is it a paradox? We don't really think so. You know, when you look at it, you know, the guiding principles are almost exactly the same. Same principles that drive successful project management, drive successful open source projects. our critical success factors are really very complementary. It's all about the people and engaging the people and really driving everything through a community, whether your community is a defined project team or your community is this sort of slightly nebulous open source group. And then our examples, we can see that, you know, open source and project management is already being used very much in government. They are, in many cases, they are already overlap, and so there's lots of ways to make that happen for your specific projects. So, you know, there is a happy medium. And you know, one of the things, you know, Sabine and I go back and forth sometimes about open source and project management. You know, like with anything else, there's a middle ground, right? So when you start looking at open source projects and how they're actually run, in many cases, there's a published schedule. There are published deliverables. So, you know, they'll say, we're going to hit, you know, beta version 1 on October 29th, right? And there'll be a mad dash to get there. And the reason why there's a mad dash isn't because, in many cases, people are actually paid to participate. In some cases, it's just because people care about what they're working on, right? Because it's part of what they care about, even if they're paid by the organization to participate. In many cases, you know, they put the extra effort in because they care about it, right? They want it to be successful. There's a pride of ownership that comes with it, right? Because you're creating something and giving something back. And that obviously, that stirs something up inside folks to make them really want to drive to success. Go ahead. So our main themes is that open source and project management methodologies, they really depend on the same kind of ideas of having process and some structure involved. You know, that a big thing I wanted to get across here is that open source is viable for government. It is being used in government at all levels. There are government-sponsored projects. One of the things I didn't mention earlier that I kind of wish I had now is that NASA, through their Ames group, has 50 open source projects. They have their own license. It's been recognized by the Open Source Initiative. So it's, you know, they're really committed to it. Now, obviously, they're very much a research organization in many ways, but they're really committed to open source being as a way to build their software. You know, one of the Mars probes actually was using an open source language, is using a version of Lisp. And they had a problem, and so they went back to the community actually to get some help in trying to figure out how to resolve this problem as the probe was, you know, halfway to Mars. And because of the particular language they were using, they were actually able to make changes while the code was running on that particular probe. And they had the community supporting them in doing that, which is a pretty neat thing to see that someone's debugging a big piece of software that's literally, you know, a couple hundred thousand miles away. Let's see, the project management and open source really depend on the same principles. We've seen how, you know, they work together, they support each other because they're really driven by the people. And, you know, to sort of reiterate that point, it's all about people and not so much methodology and tools. So that's it, thank you. Any questions?
Okay. Do we have any questions? We have 6 speakers. If you have any questions on project management or open source, anyone?
I guess this is to Brian or Mike. I've been involved in a number of open source projects that once they've been technically successful, the core group has taken the code and converted that for a for-profit traditional software. And it's been very frustrating because you see all the whole community getting involved in the discussion groups and testing and so forth, but then the code being left at version 2 when you really need 3 to get where you really want to go. And is there a licensing that we can look for when we're going into open source that will help us avoid that type of situation?
Answer is yes. To expand on that, there's actually a couple licenses. So different communities have different ones. So there's some groups like Apache, they love it when companies do that. So IBM, Microsoft, Oracle have all taken Apache, stamped their name on and sold it. The Apache community doesn't care. There are others like Linux, where if you make any changes or sell it, you have to contribute your changes back. So there's no taking a project at version 2 renaming it Brian Lee Incorporated, Scott Lieberman Incorporated, and selling it and abandoning the project, because the GPL and LGPL licenses force you to contribute them back. Moses talked about companies like Linksys and Asus. They actually were sued by the Free Software Foundation and received judgments forcing those companies to contribute their changes back. So it depends on the community determining your license. So yes, there is. Some communities like it, some communities don't care.
And those are usually listed on the supplier where you get the code?
It's very straightforward. So most projects, one of the first links on the main page is license. And that tells you whether it's, you know, we don't care, or if you're trying to commercialize this, you better give your code back. Or some licenses forbid you from commercialization. So it's really dependent on the community and project.
Okay, any other questions? Project management, certification, open source?
My name is John Araujo, I'm from the CDC, and this is a question for the open source presenters. Does open source software impact public health differently from non-open source software? And if the answer is yes, would you tell us how?
That's a tough question. I think it will impact it. I think a lot of the reason you're hearing, even over the past couple of years, you've heard presentations about open source and collaborative development, is that there are some things within open source and collaborative development that kind of go hand in hand. They're very complementary to one another. So you don't have to have open source to do collaborative development, but if you do have open source, if you're developing open source code, you're much more likely to get people to volunteer, to become part of that effort. You're much more likely to be able to leverage all of the expertise and intelligence that's out in the community to participate in developing that code. So what we've seen in some other groups that are doing this, like CA Big, the Cancer Biomedical Informatics Grid up at the National Cancer Institute, they've been doing this for 4 years now using the open source methodology, the open source model, developing open source software. And that's exactly what they found, is that they've been able to get the community very much engaged in developing the software with them, as opposed to having one small group trying to do it all themselves. That's been extremely powerful. So yeah, I think it will impact it. I think the impact is going to be in the amount of work that will actually be able to be accomplished over a shorter period of time. And that's really what you're looking for. You're looking for cost savings. You're looking for shorter time to delivery. So there's lots of things where you will see an impact from this.
Sorry, I'm Dry Lopez from the CDC of Guatemala Field Station. I'm just curious if there is any movement to move to an open source development cycle for any of the tools that are available, like EpiInfo or any of the other programs that are distributed regularly by the CDC and have been for years, but are not really responsive to changes from the larger public health community at this time, if there's any push to collaborate more with the users.
Yes. I mean, that for probably the last year, and Dr. Leonard, who's the director of NICFI right now, is very much in favor of open source, open collaborative development. So he sees that model as being the way that NICFI should be heading in the future. So yeah, he's been very actively looking at, you know, which things that are within NICFI's purview can be moved to an open source model, EpiInfo being one of them. And there are others like the outbreak management system, and there are a few others that they're looking at. Now, of course, it can't happen overnight. You don't just snap your fingers and you go from a standard kind of software project to an open source project. So there has to be a lot of planning. The question of licensing, you know, what kind of license should CDC pursue in terms of open source? How can we move stuff that's been done? EpiInfo has been around for 20 years. So, and it's been fairly open, but not really open source, not that kind of development. But so yes, there's movement in that direction, and it will happen.
This is for the project management folks. I'm curious, do you see open source development as more or less impressing a specific pattern of project management on those types of activities, or do you feel that the project management is actually, the project management techniques are independent of the fact that it is open source?
I think you can use the project management techniques and apply them to open source projects. And I think the main debates is that as project managers, you have the tendency of want to control. And when it comes to open source, you have to have the ability to let go of control. And so there's going to be that kind of push and pull. But there are some really strong techniques, project management techniques, that you can use to have really good and strong open source projects.
Well, I think the other point to make, too, is that when you look at open source as a development methodology, it's not any different than having a different development methodology, like having, say, RUP, right, the Rational Unified Process. There are different rules, and, you know, there's slightly different ways to engage folks to do it. But you're building software in a particular way. You're still going to integrate your project management methodology with your software development methodology in similar ways. So it's not terribly different than what you currently do now.
Okay, one more question.
Thanks, this is for the open source folks. Do you have any common pitfalls, best practices in taking a current closed source project and making it open source? You know, if that's the direction you want to go, what are some best practices and very common pitfalls that are encountered in making that transition? Thank you.
Thanks, Tom. Unfortunately, I don't have any direct experience in that because there's not too many projects, but I have an example of one of the earlier Java application servers. So initially, when Java came out, I don't know how many programs there are, it's a pretty popular programming language, it's about 12 years old or so, there was a reference implementation that Sun built, and it was okay, and some programmers used it. And Sun actually had a team building it, and they were spending money building it, but what happened is, as the Java development language changed, they didn't want to commit those resources, but the community did. So the community had lots of changes. Sun actually handed that over in whole cloth. They just said, okay, community, you want it? You got it. And they took the source as is and kind of handed it over. So what became the Sun servlet runner became Tomcat, and then eventually became Apache Tomcat. And some of the problems were it was a chunk of source code developed in Sun's method. So Sun has a way of building software just like CDC does. And so getting that just restructured into an open source manner and the way that people can view changes and make changes and build it and test it was a huge overhaul. And it took a few months or a few years to get that to a point where Apache is extremely well deployed, well used, runs in CEC every agency. But the change was transitioning from one company's methodology to a community's was big. I don't know how you avoid that other than, you know, you're going to have a transition period where it's going to be kind of messy and you have to work through that. There was a while where you could either use the original Sun reference implementation and still download and use that if you didn't think Tomcat was ready. But now, 10 years later, nobody uses that version because Tomcat's improved and changed and so forth. So it's really, I don't think there's any easy way to avoid that birthing pain or that transition pain, but the idea is to sort of recognize it's there, get ready, and make sure you have the resources to support it and move it over.
And I have one question for Brian. It's concerning certification. I've heard of a certification called CompTIA, C-O-M-P-T-I-A, Project Plus. How's that different from the PMP certification?
I don't know.
Okay.
There are a lot of certification and training classes in project management out there, but the ones that Brian mentioned are PMI endorsed and PMI kind of organized. Those tend to have more larger recognition, but I don't think it necessarily holds more weight than others, just a matter of greater recognition because it's endorsed by PMI.
So
right. The slides for this presentation will be out on the Finn website, so, and also the contact information. So if you want to contact any of these speakers, you can pull up the slide, and it should be on the last page. All right. Thank you very much.